The reading is a continuation of descriptions in Acts of the people who had been impacted by Jesus' appearance, life, death, and resurrection as they spread news about that life to communities around. The lesson. Then Paul stood in front of the Areopagus and said, "Athenians, I see how extremely religious you are in every way. For as I went through the city and looked carefully at the objects of your worship, I found among them an altar with the inscription, 'To an unknown God.' What therefore you worship as unknown, this I proclaim to you. The God who made the world and everything in it, he who is Lord of heaven and earth, does not live in shrines made by human hands. Nor is he served by human hands as though he needed anything, since he himself gives to all mortals life and breath and all things. From one ancestor he made all nations to inhabit the whole earth, and he allotted the times of their existence and the boundaries of the places where they would live, so that they would search for God and perhaps grope for him and find him. Though indeed he is not far off from each one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being, as even some of your own poets have said, for we too are his offspring. Since we are God's offspring, we ought not to think that the deity is like gold or silver or stone, an image formed by the art and imagination of mortals. While God has overlooked the times of human ignorance, now he commands all people everywhere to repent, because he has fixed a day on which he will have the world judged in righteousness by a man whom he has appointed. And of this he has given assurance to all by raising him from the dead." This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
I invite you to focus with me on verse 23. "For as I went through the city and looked carefully at the objects of your worship, I found among them an altar with the inscription, 'To an unknown God.' What therefore you worship as unknown, that I proclaim to you." In the Message, a paraphrase by Eugene Peterson, the same verse sounds like this: "When I arrived here the other day, I was fascinated with all the shrines I came across, and then I found one inscribed, 'To the God Nobody Knows.' I'm here to introduce you to this God so that you can worship intelligently, know what you're dealing with." When granddaughter Lily was little, she inspired our walks in the cemetery near her home. As winter gave way to spring, she would gather up armfuls of plastic flowers that had been strewn about by winter winds and snow removal equipment. Those lovely blossoms she would bring home to help make her house more beautiful. In a conspiracy ignored by Lily, the flowers vanished soon after they made their appearance, in spite of their plastic loveliness. While she conducted her harvest, we talked of many things, and she had a special interest in cemetery markers for little children. One day she asked me, "Grandpa, Why does God let people die? Not remembering what I had learned in seminary that would help me answer such a question, I asked her what she thought. If you promise not to leave, I'll tell you what she said in a few minutes. Luke wrote two books in our New Testament. In the Gospel of Luke, he begins the story with Jesus' birth. In Acts, he begins with the birth of the church. And in each, he describes the Spirit of God as essential to what is taking place. In chapter 17, efforts to bring the message about Jesus led to disturbances in Thessalonica and Berea, where Jewish leaders stirred up opposition and threats. In Athens, it would be a different crowd, but not necessarily one that is friendlier. If rumors preceded Paul about the ruckus he had already provoked in other places, the culture despisers in Athens may have expected little about him to impress them. Perhaps those experiences of Paul in other towns prompted a more cautious approach in Athens. One version says that when Paul got to Athens, he looked around. He began where they were, a strategy the church has often struggled to embrace and often abandoned. What he beheld was a crowd of people that were covering every religious base they could think of. I'm reminded of some advice Lily gave me when she was a couple of years older. She might have enjoyed Athens. People, she said, should have two churches. That way there is always a backup. The people in Athens were big on backups. The crowd seemed to have a lot of time on their hands and enjoyed being teased with new ideas and may have felt some smugness in deciding what was worthy of their attention. Earlier, Paul was dismissed by his likely audience as a babbler. He was something like a third-party candidate negotiating with the networks to get on a presidential debate. The rationale being that you have to have a following before you can demonstrate a worthiness of being followed. The culture despisers in Athens did not easily extend the benefit of the doubt, but Paul did not need their admiration any more than Jesus had required Pilate's goodwill. Nevertheless, Paul looked around. That God that nobody knows is exactly the God I've met, he said. Let me tell you about him. Now there was no turning back. This God is not like us, continues Paul. The God nobody knows does not live in temples built by humans. The God nobody knows is not served by humans' hands as though he was needing something. The God nobody knows cannot be represented by images made by human design and skill. The God that nobody knows does not traffic in looking good on resumes, a guarantee that you will meet the right people, or that you will have financial prosperity or not need to floss. St. Paul confronts the culture despisers with clarity and without apology. This was not a backup God. This was not a God to add to one's collection like another trinket from the Orient. Paul also hints that at their core, they already had a knowledge of this God, however poorly formulated, in the language of their own poets. Verse 28. I suspect around the fringes of the crowd, many must have chuckled at Paul's claims. Others may have murmured to one another that they were surely expecting something more challenging or believable or intellectual. After all, this is Athens. We're educated. We've been around. We're not gullible. Where's your proof? Have you published? One day, a group of college students decided to stage a revival meeting for the entertainment of the student body. Great care was taken to place in stark relief every caricature of this emotional cauldron of a religious experience, of which many of them had substantial contempt. They might have felt right at home in Athens. Once their imaginations were invested in the effort, it was clear they had chosen something they would be able to accomplish with genuine flair. From beginning to end, the service was a progression of mockery and exaggeration. The participants fed off one another's creative efforts to make evangelism in general, and revival meetings in particular, objects of scorn and ridicule. The event was planned so that the crescendo would be at the end of a spellbinding sermon, culminating in an invitation for sinners to repent and come forward to be saved for this life and to escape hell in the life to come. Great energy went into a ranting sermon, and many students grinned in superiority to think there were people who took this kind of thing seriously. To add to the dramatic impact of the invitation, and perhaps to savor the tart taste of scorn, the sweating preacher tarried to the point of awkwardness his urgent appeal for lost sinners to repent. No one had noticed that at the back of the auditorium there was a janitor waiting to turn off the lights and to lock the doors when the charade was over. He listened intently throughout the whole mock service, and just as the invitation was drawing to a close, he leaned his dust mop against a nearby staircase and slowly made his way to the front, as the preacher urged. Suddenly, a few realized that something was going on that transcended their mocking production. A thoughtful student stepped up and welcomed the unintended convert. That night, many came to mock one religious expression. One man came to clean up after them and received the gift of life. You just never know what the God that nobody knows might do. Not many mighty, not many noble are called, Paul had written to his friends at Corinth. When, in my conversation with Lily, I referred the question back to her, it turned out that she had a special perspective. God lets people die, so there will always be room for more people, she explained. That was similar to Paul's message to his cultured despisers in Athens. God let his son die and be restored to life, so there would always be room for more people. It appears from verses that follow our reading that most went back to their endless discussions and in search of other more accommodating backup gods. But there were some believers, distant spiritual cousins of a janitor, and perhaps you and me. Today, Today, May 29th, is the third anniversary of the death of my brother Daniel. He is buried in the National Cemetery at Fort Snelling in St. Paul, of which there is a picture in your bulletin. Like granddaughter Lily, when she was a little girl, we may make pilgrimages alone or with others to cemeteries and memorial gardens this Memorial Day weekend. There is a phrase from today that I wish you could remember. God has acted so that there will always be room for more people. Even when we come to observe our losses, when we want to bury hurts that we are weary of carrying, when we want to permanently discard grudges that we have buried in shallow, well-marked graves in case we should want to exhume them in a future dispute, there is always room for us when an aching loneliness defies every measurement that we know. There is always room for more of what we had already disclosed to this God of compassion and mercy. If you decide to post that picture someplace, let it remind you that God is always making room for more people, including the people of whom we disapprove. It's how God redeems tombstone territory. Even among echoes of a garbled message that others discount, we can join the janitor, leaving behind some tools that we no longer need, or tools that have never served us very well, in favor of God's invitation to come home, where there's always room for more people. Let us sing the hymn.